Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the day, getting to spend time with you prescribing hope for healthy families. And today we're going to talk about something pretty fun, and I think pretty relatable. We're going to talk about finding joy and purpose in every stage of your life, and we're going to talk to a guest who has found joy and purpose in helping younger generations learn to love to read. Now, this is fun for me because I have always been a reader. I am a reader from way back. I am that girl. I want you to picture this girl in the 1980s with permed wings and a very ruffly blouse with a pastel sweater vest, who is, you know, hiding in her book under her, a novel under my algebra book, you know, trying to read during class. That was me. I love reading. I love the world that it opens up. But we see generations changing in the way that they are reading. We don't see as much reading for fun. And a 2023 Gallup poll found that only 17% of Americans aged 15 to 24 read for pleasure every day. That's down from 30% in 2004. So just basically one generation prior. Now, why is this happening? Well, we can't really say scientifically for sure, but I think common sense tells us that Gen Z spends over 7 hours a day on screens, and most of that is short form content. These are little 30-second videos, micro content, and neuroscientists are worried that this constant scrolling encourages skimming rather than deep reflective reading, and this is reshaping how our brains process information. Now, for me in a science field, I look and I see scientists who are studying this, seeing how it is literally changing the structure of our brains, which is kind of a big thing to think about, because sometimes when we see society changing, when we see trends changing, you know, there's this tension of, oh, well, you know, you just want to hold on to the way that things used to be done, but we're moving forward. But sometimes we move forward so quickly, we don't stop to think about the ways that that can change society. And so my guest today is here to talk to us about that. She is a living proof that it's never too late to reinvent your life or reignite your purpose. We're talking today to Teresa Granberry. Now, she's the president of Harvest Creek. She's a lifelong lover of books, so I think we're going to be instant friends just based on that. And she turned a childhood passion into a full-blown career. Now, after being told at the age of 55 she was past her prime, oh, it hurts me to say that out loud, she proved the doubters wrong by writing The Second to the Last Box, Finding Joy and Purpose in Midlife and Beyond. She did a national survey on the midlife experience. She uncovered some powerful insights, and now she helps others rewrite their own stories, write stories to share with others, and she encourages people to read those stories. She is a creative force in the publishing world, from designing over 150 book covers to coaching aspiring authors. So stay with us, because we're going to jump right into her story of resilience and finding joy and purpose. Teresa, I'm so glad to have you here with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's quite an honor to be here. I really appreciate it.
Well, Teresa, why don't you go ahead and just tell us a little bit of your story? Like I said, I know that I, you know, read that in your story, but it hurt me a little bit to say that out loud, that you were told at 55 that you were past your prime. I feel like we're collectively cringing saying that's not old. But tell us about that experience and what happened and how it changed the trajectory of your life.
You know, never in my wildest dreams did I think, after having a corporate career for almost 20 years, traveling all over the world, I was on an executive training path with an $8 billion corporation, that when I left that in the rearview mirror, as I left downtown Houston one day after leaving that career, that when I went to volunteer for organizations and even within my own church, that people would tell me that, again, I was past my prime, that I was too old to volunteer.
That's so rude. That's just so rude.
That was an age when I was really, I looked at myself looking back now, I was smarter than I had been. I was wiser than I'd been. I had more flexible income to provide input on shopping experiences and other things that people were asking about, surveys and so on. So because I had done so much traveling, I did a lot of online shopping. And so one of our national survey companies, and I won't mention their name, but I think most everyone knows who that might be, called me and said, "Hey, we noticed you do a lot of online shopping. Would you like to be a secret shopper and work for us?" I had a degree in marketing. I loved that kind of thing. And so they said, "We're going to do a test shop and we're going to ask you to buy a part and then return that and document your whole experience just so we can evaluate the company that I was going to be shopping for." I think it was a dryer part. I ordered it. I made arrangements to return it. I'm very detailed. So the survey that they gave me, I filled out all kinds of answers for it. They called and they said, "Oh, we loved all of your answers. You're just what we're looking for. So fill out this application and you're hired." They even asked me if I could handle 3 or 4 shops a week, as they referred to them. I said, "Sure." And I was very excited about it. Well, a month went by after I submitted the application and I didn't hear back. And so I thought maybe something had been overlooked in the hiring process. So I called their customer service number, and a very sweet girl with a foreign accent, probably she was part of an offshore customer service team, said, "Oh, goodness, let me look up your application here and see if I can tell what the holdup is." And I could hear her clicking the typewriter in the background. And she said, "Oh, did you click the second to the last box?" Now, I had never even heard that term before. And I thought, what have I done? And she said, "So that means you are between the ages of 55 and 64. You know, when you go to a doctor's office or whatever, and they have the age brackets that you would check, apparently by my age and stage at that point, I had checked the second to the last box." So I bristled up a little and I said, "What does that have to do with anything?" And she said, "Well, to be honest, our company doesn't really utilize the opinions of anybody in those last two boxes." Can you imagine that my opinion after the age of 55 was no longer valuable to any merchandiser or marketing firm? I had passed the state of relevance. Even in that in that last box, which is about a 30-year span, because that covers 65 on, I couldn't even believe it. So I started telling people about it and so on, and people go, "Oh, that same thing happened to me. Oh, that happened to me." So I hired a national firm to conduct a survey. And on the survey, you had to be at least 55 to participate. And there was an open-ended question that said, "Tell me about any experience where you've been discriminated against because of your age or stage." And consequently, Dr. Peck, the book practically wrote itself, because there was story after story about people feeling irrelevant. And I thought back to what had happened to David in the Bible. He wrote a psalm that said, "Why do you cast me down because of my gray hair?" Yes. Oh, and David goodness. Was feeling probably what we were all feeling at that point, mm-hmm. that he was feeling more empowered than ever with knowledge and wisdom, but he was being disrespected because of gray hair. If you look at Ronald Reagan, Julia Child, Colonel Harlan Sanders, there were so many people. Mother Teresa herself won the Nobel Prize after middle age. And so the book highlights some of the accomplishments of people that were, I guess, what the world now deems past their prime, but had their greatest success in life at that point. That got me into book writing. And then people started coming to me and asking me, well, would I help them with their book and so on? And one thing evolved to another. And the next thing I knew, after retiring from a 20-year career, I had retooled my graphic design talents into publishing. And that's where I am today.
You know, it reminds me, Teresa, of a friend I have who is retiring. And but she says, "I'm not retiring. I'm refiring." That's the phrase that she uses. And I thought, yes, that is so perfect. She's just refiring her energy in another direction. All of the experience, the talents, the life perspective, the wisdom that she has, she's refiring it in another direction. But I want to know more about that national survey that you did, Teresa, about people's midlife experiences. What did you learn? What surprised you? Or did anything surprise you? What kinds of things did people share with you?
And again, it went back to what the psalmist had written about just the lack of respect. The Bible says that the older people are to teach the younger people. And what I found is right now, particularly because people have been raised in a smart world with smart technology, they feel very knowledgeable because they have knowledge right at their fingertips. Knowledge is something that's obtained through study and academia. But wisdom is something that is acquired through age and experience. And you can know about something, but until you've lived through it or walked through it, you really don't have total wisdom on it. And that's not something that you can learn through a book. And when you marry both knowledge and wisdom, you have the total package. And so there are things I can learn from my grandkids, like how to use my phone and how to yeah, use an app on my computer. And there are things they can learn from me, having the wisdom of 66 years on this earth. And I think when we partner together, we are smarter than ever, and we're equipped to teach each other and work with each other as the Bible commands.
I agree. There is a big generation gap, and we have a generation of parents and grandparents who are watching children grow up in a world that looks completely foreign to them. We did not grow up in a world of social media, a world that's living at the speed of a smartphone. And what I see is a lot of parents and a lot of children and grandchildren who say basically, well, you can't understand. You can't possibly understand what I'm going through because you didn't live this. But I think that what we've missed there is that, no, they may not have lived through smartphones, but they did live through the same emotions that we did. They did live through the same kinds of hurts. And there's the same sin issues that are underlie all of this, the same challenges and struggles that are overarching stories throughout human history. We can learn so much wisdom. So I think having someone there to say, yeah, I've been through some tough times. Maybe my tough time didn't look exactly like yours, and my challenges didn't look exactly like yours, but here's what I learned about character. Here's what I've learned about my faith. Here's how God sustained me over that time. I think that is a real missed opportunity. And grandparents have something that parents don't often have, and that's time to actually sit down and to tell their stories and to have that face-to-face communication. So what did you hear in the survey? I want to go back to that. What you heard in the survey from other people? Were they having the same experience as you?
Well, there was some disrespect that people were encountering, particularly from teachers. And people included a lot of information about what their occupation or situation was at the time that they completed the survey. I remember several teachers were not feeling respected by their students because their students were even calling them names like dinosaurs and things like that. With the age of rapid technology, there were a lot of corporate workers that were being replaced with higher salary employees who could do the work faster. And again, this is where the experience comes in, because experience is a great teacher. And there was a lady who was an accountant, and she conducted audits, and she'd been through several audits. She could tell anyone what to expect in an audit, but because some of her younger accountants had never walked through that process themselves, they only knew what the book told them to expect. And there were a lot of peripherals and things that experience had shown her would benefit the success of an audit. And so she was recalling some of the resistance that her younger staff were to, I don't need to know all that. Let's just go by the checklist, so to speak. And so there was a lot of resistance on the part of wisdom.
I want to hear more about that. We're up against our first break already. Can you believe it? But when we back, we'll have more about finding joy and purpose in midlife and beyond. And don't go away, because we're going to dive into the topic of how do we get younger kids to read and why does it matter? Don't go away. We'll be right back with more from Teresa Granberry. When a woman experiences an unplanned pregnancy, she often feels alone and afraid. So many times her first response is to seek out an abortion. But because of the generosity of listeners like you, that search may lead her to a Preborn Network clinic. Preborn offers God's love and compassion to hurting women and then provides a free ultrasound to introduce them to the life growing inside them. This combination brings the ultimate miracle of life to life and doubles a baby's chance at life, which is why Preborn saw over 67,000 babies rescued last year alone. Meet Maddie. Maddie was in a tough situation as she wasn't sure who the father was, but after receiving counseling, prayer, and a free ultrasound at a Preborn Network clinic, everything changed. Maddie discovered she had twins and found the strength she needed to choose life. Your tax-deductible donation of $28 sponsors one ultrasound. How many babies can you save? Please donate your best gift today. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Welcome back, friends. That is Write Your Story by Francesca Battistelli. And today we're talking all about stories. We're talking about the story of our guest, Teresa Granberry. And she has been sharing her story. And she's really spent her life immersed in stories, not just having read them, but helping others bring them to the light. Teresa Granberry is the president of Harvest Creek. She's a writing coach, a speaker, and she has been a lifelong reader. And she's been sharing her story of being told she was past her prime at the age of 55 and the second to last box. Have you ever been filling out a survey or something like that? Maybe it's after you have a big birthday and you think, oh no, I've got to move down one more box. It reminds me of a precious lady that I used to go to church with who told me she had graduated through every Sunday school class that could be in the church. And so she was in the last one that you could be in, the oldest age bracket. And they called it Next Step Heaven, which still makes me laugh a little bit. But Teresa's been sharing her story and how that inspired her to start a national survey to see what are other people's experiences. And Teresa, you were in the middle of sharing some of those observations and some of those stories that people shared with you. So I'll let you go ahead and finish your thought there.
Well, like I said, I think what the survey revealed, and probably some of us had already surmised, is that information was replacing wisdom and experience. And I think it's only when you combine both of those that you have the full learning experience. Until I've walked through something, I can have all the book knowledge that I can retain, but until I've actually walked through it and experienced it for myself, that's when it really comes together as far as gelling in my mind, as me retaining the information I need to get through it the next time, to equip others to experience something. You know, in our business, we help people a lot with what is known as memoirs. And so maybe your listeners would be interested in the difference between a memoir and a biography. A biography is typically written for a high profile person, and it's a chronological account of their entire life from birth to their end of their days. But a memoir is a slice of time within a person's life. It has a crescendo. It does have a start, middle, and an end, but it is a point in time where something happened, some sort of derailing event or some situation or something, even a tragedy. And there's this crescendo to a point where the person that's writing about it can no longer face it the way they are. And they come to a turning point. They make a decision. They find a solution. They turn things around. And then that is all documented in just this point in time called a memoir. And those are the most relatable nonfiction books right now because people can relate to whatever they're describing. They don't need the person's entire life from start to finish. Years ago, my husband and I had a baby die in the womb. And at that time, I thought I was the only person in the world feeling some of the thoughts I had felt as I was walking through grief. And a dear, sweet lady from our church brought a book by and just left it at my door. And as I read that book, I realized it was an account of someone else who'd gone through almost exactly what we had experienced. And I can't even tell you 40 years later the name of that book, but I can tell you that this lady's willingness to take one of the most painful portions of her life and document what she was feeling and open herself up to sharing that with others, as well as providing hope by sharing the turning point she had with the Lord where she made a decision to walk forward, was so helpful to me. And that's why I'm a believer in books. I'm a believer in the positive outcome that others can have, whether they're inspired or excited or entertained or whatever that book's purpose is. There's a positive outcome for readers when a book is written in such a way that it's relatable to others.
You're right. It's so powerful to know that you are not alone, that someone has had that similar experience. And I talk about the circle of people that you need in your life. There's five of them. One of those is someone who's in your same boat, someone who's going through the same thing you are. And one of the stories that you brought to life was a guest that we just recently featured. And I'll encourage my listeners to listen in again or catch it if you missed it. We're going to air that for a special on Memorial Day. But we interviewed a man named Thomas Logan, and he wrote a book called Fishing with Joey, a memoir of my Marine son. And he talked about his son who died in a helicopter accident and just talked about really an incredible story of love and life and loss. But that's one thing that I would encourage our listeners to listen to. And you've done a great job, Teresa, of talking about why story is so transformational. And so where do you see that Gen Z is not engaging in reading these kinds of things? What kind of trends are you seeing now in your profession? How are you seeing professionally and personally?
Well, of course, Gen Z, which are typically the near adult children of millennials, they're primarily college age, and from about 1997 to 2012, they're the first generation that's been raised entirely with smart technology. So when they had to, you know, I'm dating myself here, but when I had to write a term paper, I carried around encyclopedias and I spent half the day in the library to do any research. This generation can easily access anything by their phone. And yet that has caused a lot of mental illness and a lot of anxiety within that generation. They're the generation that some analysts are calling the one that has the most spiritual distress. And as you alluded to at the beginning of this conversation, there are benefits to smart technology, but there are some indicators that it can also have some devastating effects, as is proven with this generation. So one of the things that they're used to with this instant technology and instant information is with the Bible. And they don't want to have to open a physical Bible. They have all of that right there on their phone in any translation, in any version, which is convenient, but they just want snippets. They want the condensed, concise version of whatever teaching or story that you're trying to convey. And yet, because of the spiritual distress within this generation, over 50% of them are returning to the Bible for some sort of answer, particularly in the United States and the UK. Over the past year, Bible sales for Gen Zers have increased 22%. And that's significant for one generation. It makes me very excited. I feel like we're poised for a grassroots revival in our nation anyway. And I feel like the time is now to try to reach them. I'm reminded of an entire generation in the Israelite community where they did not pass things on to their children. And one full generation of the Israelites missed the promises of God because of that. I think we're charged as a people to pass on this legacy in this community of faith that we have. One thing that's really been shocking to me is the way information is being conveyed through books to Gen Zers. I don't know, have you heard of the Action Bible?
I have. We have heard of that. And even looking at other short forms and comic book style and all kinds of, yes, exactly. Yes, tell us more.
So books are linear. They have a story, and so they have a start and a conclusion. But then you can fold in some graphics and some visuals in books, and that adds that extra dimension to the senses. You can even move it into film, where you have movement and audio dialogue as well. Well, a graphic novel, which is sort of a succinct art form, very similar to a comic book, has been running like wildfire in the publishing community. We're seeing adaptations of classics like The Odyssey by Homer, Corrie Ten Boom's Hiding Place, Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, converted or adapted into these graphic novels, which is a comic book style form of these classics. And they're even winning Newbery Awards. Now, a Newbery Award is the equivalent to a Pulitzer Prize, but for children's books. And the first one was awarded to a man named Jerry Craft, who wrote a book called New Kid back during COVID in 2020. And he received a Newbery Medal. Now, to put that in perspective, a Newbery Medal is very difficult to receive. Laura Ingalls Wilder received 5 honor awards, which is the next level of award, but she never in her lifetime won a Newbery Medal. And yet a man who created a comic book version of a story won a Newbery Medal in 2020. We're also seeing educators put these in their core curriculum because kids like the combination of the action, the dialogue bubbles, the movement that's presented in the art form. So the Action Bible takes 25 chapters of the Bible, but it is in this comic presentation. And the man who created it was a primary illustrator for Marvel Comics. So you can imagine his, you know, the quality of his work and his creativity. I have 9 grandkids, and I gave the Action Bible to a couple of them that are in that age and stage, primarily 8 to 12. They are soaking it up. If you go to Amazon, the Action Bible right now has more 5-star reviews than 2 other versions of the Bible that were also written for kids. So it's really catching like wildfire.
You know, that's so fascinating to me, Teresa. And I think, you know, I see in my space, I see this tension that we're trying to navigate, because there is one side that says we have got to find relevant ways to share the gospel. And when you talk about how many kids are reading this, how they're responding to it, how it's really written in the language of their generation, and we, you know, putting aside like making sure that the translation is theologically sound, all of those things, that I'm putting that aside for the moment. But there's a generation that says, yeah, we need to do this because we need to get God's word in the hands of kids. We need to engage them. And then there's another side that says, yeah, but are we just catering to them? Are we just changing the ways that they're reading? Like, are they not going to read their Bible like they did before? And what about ways? Is this okay to have a comic book Bible? I feel like there's a tension there. And there's something in the middle for how do we reach Gen Z but also honor those timeless truths. One of the interesting things I'm seeing in trends is that Gen Z is having an affinity for what they call vintage. Now I'm talking about like the 1970s, which is still so painful to say. They like records and they like printed photos and things like that. And we see them longing for that kind of sacredness in a church environment too. It's different than the way the rest of the world is. So I feel like there's room for both, and there's room to hold that tension. How do you see that in your business and also in your faith and reaching, like you've talked about, you have customers you're thinking about, but you have grandkids you're thinking about. Where does it lie for you?
I couldn't agree with you more that there is a tension, because there's two sides to every coin. And one of the things that is a very important thing for a parent to vet out when they're letting their child read any book, because there's been this infiltration of a progressive movement that is trying to deconstruct Christianity. They're Satan's tool to do that. And so it's very subtle and sometimes, and yet very obvious in others. And so I would caution all parents to look ahead to things and not just assume that because it's a Bible that it's good to go. I do feel good about the Action Bible, and there's been a couple of other additional versions of it that have come out that talk about Bible heroes and so on. And it seems to have had a very positive effect on kids. One of the things that I learned as a writing coach was you write to meet people where they are, not where you wish they were. And I wish my grandkids would be strong in the Lord. I've prayed for that since the day they were born. I wish they would know God and never, ever have any other thoughts besides that. But sometimes they're not where I wish they were. And so to get them in the Word is a start, a toe in the water. It's an opportunity for a seed to grow. And it's important for me as a grandparent, a very praying grandparent, I might add, to pray that those seeds aren't stolen, aren't trying to grow through the rocks and the trials of today's world. But I think that the Christian space right now, even fiction, you know, years ago, you had Tim LaHaye write the Left Behind series, and people were just blown away because we'd never had really Christian stories since C.S. Lewis and the Chronicles and so on. It'd been a long time since there was an interesting fiction book that conveyed truth. I think there's a great space right now, an opportunity for that, because we're in the end days. People are having questions about that. They're having their own imaginations about what may or may not happen. And so these are opportunities to get the truth into people's heart through the written word. And I think that that's God's plan. I think we're here for that time, actually.
Well, I want to talk more about that, Teresa, and we'll have some more questions to ask about how do we get Gen Z and Gen Alpha engaged in reading? I mean, they are reading so much about the world. How do we redirect their attention to read things that are going to edify them, that are going to be truthful? Just about what we were just talking about, Teresa, there is so much that they're overwhelmed with information. How do we get them good information in a way that's written well? We'll be right back with Teresa Granberry.
In order to become godly men, young boys need to be shown what it takes. That's why Men of Honor exists. It's a privilege to teach boys age 7 to 17 the necessary life skills they'll use the rest of their lives. From 5:30 to 7:30 every Tuesday night from June 3rd to the 24th at the AFA campus, they'll learn basic craftsmanship, yard maintenance, and much more. It's free, and that even includes the food. Find out more about Men of Honor today at afa.net/events. And I sang in Christ alone, my solid ground. Amazing grace, just how sweet the sound. On that rugged cross, Jesus paid it all. Because he lives, this is my song.
Welcome back, friends. That song is This Is My Story by Mac Powell. Definitely in my top 20 list of 2000 songs in my top 20. I love, love, love music. I love stories. And we're talking about the power of story today. So let me ask you some questions as we come back. These might be questions that you share with your family tonight. When was the last time you read a book for fun? And what was it? Is reading a book still relevant in a world of 15-second videos? And maybe you can ask your family, is there a book that changed your life and maybe could change someone else's? I'll tell you, the book that changed my life is the Bible, but there are a lot of other books that I have read that have really deeply impacted me. And our guest today is talking about some of those stories and books. And for Teresa Granberry, she has done so much. When someone told her best years were behind her, she wrote a book about it. And now she's helping others to do the same. She's the president of Harvest Creek. She's a speaker, a writing coach, a book designer. And she's helped hundreds of authors, designed best-selling covers, and written several books of her own. And her latest, The Second to the Last Box, Finding Joy and Purpose in Midlife and Beyond, is a powerful look at reinvention and hope. And Teresa, some of the books you've mentioned today are books that I love. And actually, I love these full circle moments because you talked about Corrie Ten Boom and her book, The Hiding Place, which actually my daughter and I were just talking about the other day. My daughter had been rereading that and talking about just some of the profound truths that we learned from her story. You also mentioned Laura Ingalls Wilder. I definitely grew up reading Little House on the Prairie, loved those stories of resilience and courage. And those stories, even though that was someone that's whose life seemed so far removed from mine, it was so inspiring. So we're talking today, Teresa, about how do we inspire Gen Z and Gen Alpha to read, and how do we inspire them to read what is good? When I was growing up, Teresa, we didn't have things to read. If you didn't want to read the encyclopedia, if you were bored at breakfast, you would read the back of the cereal box. Now kids just can scroll and they have information overwhelm with how much they have available to read to them. How do we guide them to things that are going to point them to God's truth, that are going to strengthen their faith and not deconstruct it?
Well, again, like I said, I think the parental involvement is more important than ever. You can't assume a very, very popular children's book author was being interviewed the other day on YouTube, and it made me blush, some of the things she was talking about in her latest book. And this lady's an award-winning author. My daughter grew up reading her. My daughter has, you know, children of her own now. But I was blushing at some of the things she's including now in her latest books. With the coming of age books and the things like that, it is very easy for there to be an underlying agenda slipped into books. And so you've got to be involved in that. I have had the notion that everyone has a book in them. I think your life story is a story. And I don't think you should ever underestimate the power of what God's done for you or through you or in you. With the impact that could have with others. But right now, like you said, with the scrolling and everything, I think it has to be bite-sized and quick. I don't see, someone tried to convert the Iliad into a graphic novel. Now that's, I think it's around 1,000-page book. And it didn't work like it was expected. There was no way they could compress the story into something like that. So you lose a lot of the context. The writers of these graphic novels, which are, they're trying to appeal to the Gen Zers and Gen Alpha, are trying as hard as they can not to change the plot, the theme, the characters, but the context of a written book is so much more effective. There's also many, many formats. You have the audiobooks now, you have ebooks. I don't want to be one of those grandparents that say, back in my day, we did things like this or that. And so I'm still tied to a paper book, but I'm also glad that kids on a bus or commuting or flying over the summer or under an umbrella at the beach could have the opportunity to read a good book via ebook or to listen to one when they've got those AirPods in their ears. I think we have to capitalize on all the different opportunities and formats. When the Bible says, go ye into all the world, many of the books that Harvest Creek has published have been translated into other languages and other formats. And it excites me because it makes me feel like we are fulfilling the great commission that Jesus gave us to go into all of the world. And if a book is good in the United States, why can't it be good for kids in other parts of the world? And so we're very open to translations and revisions into other formats.
I'm really glad that you pointed out the importance of parents being engaged and knowing what their kids are reading. It used to be easier to do that, Teresa, because they would come home with a book from the library. But even now, you're talking about listening to children's authors. I hear a lot of parents who go into children's book fairs and they look at what is for sale. I just recently, a friend of mine who mentors a child in a public school went to the school book fair, and that child had brought some money for the book fair and wanted to buy some books that she said, no, you shouldn't be reading this. And it's harder now because kids are getting information and micro content. They're getting it online. And some of the books that we see that are best selling for young people are about violence and just things that no adult should be reading, much less kids should be reading. And so I think it's really important to know what your kids are reading and to give them those alternatives that are edifying to them, that are going to be encouraging. And you and I were talking during the break, Teresa, about this resurgence and this kind of on the horizon. You said you see this increase, this wave of religious and faith books coming because we see a hunger for people for spiritual information. And I saw that even in a lot of conversation about this season of American Idol, which personally I didn't watch because I don't have time to watch any TV. But I did see that they had even a worship night. They had a night where it was church music, it was spiritual music. And so we're starting to see this emergence of faith into cultural venues that usually are not avenues for faith. What are you seeing on the horizon for faith books?
This is so exciting for me. In the publishing world, we have what is known as the Big Five. They're the heavy players. Penguin Random House, Simon Schuster, Macmillan, HarperCollins. You know, people, these big corporate conglomerates that own the publishing space. And every day I'm exposed to trade magazines and journals and information that comes in with information that's relevant to the industry itself. Just recently, in the last 6 months, there's been a huge ramp up in two of the heaviest hitters in the publishing industry for the religious spirituality space. Penguin Random House, for example, already had a Catholic division, a devotional division, and so on. They had three or four divisions that were under their corporate umbrella, but they just added another major component. They brought on someone who had been in ministry to lead it. And I feel like that is a very promising sign that they see something on the horizon, that they would ramp up a business like that. You also have HarperCollins and Zondervan and Thomas Nelson fall under that. Some people don't know that the Bible Gateway app that they go to every morning to get their morning scripture is owned by a publishing company, HarperCollins. They have since added Faith Gateway, Study Gateway, and another gateway that is streaming of Christian videos, streaming of Christian audios. All of this being added makes me sense that they're feeling the same thing I am, that there's this grassroots undercurrent that is growing in America. It's a hunger. It's a need to have truth and solutions. All of us have a hole in our heart that only God can fill. And I believe that a lot of it will be accomplished through the word and through the written word.
I think in a world that is just so chaotic, that seems so dark, that seems so unpredictable, the only constant is change. And we see that things that are celebrated today are canceled tomorrow, and kids and adults alike, all generations are navigating this. And I think you're right, Teresa. I think that is driving a hunger for something that is sure, something that is sound. And What I find a lot of encouragement in is, yes, absolutely, you should be reading God's word. You should be reading straight from the Bible yourself. You should be plugged in to a church that has sound doctrine. You should be walking in fellowship with other people. You should be in some sort of discipleship group. But we get so much encouragement from hearing the testimonies of others, from hearing their faith stories, from hearing stories from hundreds of years ago, from stories from people today saying, this has been my testimony that's the same, and pointing back to the truths of Jesus Christ. And so what advice would you give to listeners who are thinking, okay, I'm feeling this surge of books that are coming. What is a good way to decide what to read and how to read it, how to be wise about what we read and how to be intentional, seeking out things that are going to encourage us and uplift us while also being discerning for things that could be deceptive?
You know, I think Shakespeare said, to thine own self be true. I think once you get in an awareness of who you are, what are the components of your individual faith and spirituality, you can find people and writers and authors who are like-minded, who can speak to your needs. I have authors come to me from time to time, and I'll say, now, who's your book for? And they'll say, oh, it's just for everyone. And really, in all actuality, when a book is written for everyone, it's for no one. Even in the Bible, which is written for everyone, of course, there are people that we identify with. I identify with David and Peter, with Martha rather than Mary. That's just the nature of my personality. So those are the people I tend to gravitate to when I'm trying to learn from heroes in the Bible. It's the same thing with authors of books. It's very important that people understand the path that God has chosen for them and walk it proudly and boldly and supplement that path with information and wisdom from people who have walked before them. So this kind of goes back to what I was talking about with some of the big heavy hitters. There are people like John Mark Comer, Mark Batterson, Elizabeth Hasselbeck, Candace Cameron Bure, people who we might identify with or might feel a connection to. And they're being signed up, Jenny Allen, for example, or some of the popular Christian writers of today that we can learn from and identify with because they are walking the same road that we are, or their spiritual journey is similar to ours. Those big five firms are signing 10 and 15 year contracts with some of these authors. Again, they seem to know that there is a channel that these people are reaching and a certain part of the population that are receiving what these particular authors have to share. You have a Sarah Young in the devotional space. She wrote God Calling or Jesus Calling. And now we're seeing all kinds of hybrid versions of her devotion, Jesus Calling for first responders, Jesus Calling for teachers, and so on. And so people are taking her work and streamlining it to certain diverse parts of our culture and so on to meet the specific needs of people. I think that is very, very important for writers, is to identify your target reader and write the book with that in mind. That's very, very important. So you're just not trying to generalize things in such a way that you water it down.
I think it's very important for anyone to be discerning and to be prayerful about the books that they read, because they do shape our minds, and we need to make sure that, you know, we're always pointing back to the truth of Scripture. What does God have to say about this? And those are all such good reminders. And so, Teresa, as we're closing our time together, what would you say to someone who maybe is thinking, you know, I'd like to write my story. That's been something I've been thinking about. And, you know, maybe now's the time to do it, whether they do it with a publishing house like yours or whether they do it just for the legacy of their family. What words of encouragement and advice would you give them?
I would encourage you to absolutely go for it. Like I say, everyone does have a book in them, and it's There are so many opportunities now from one end of the spectrum to another. It is a little more difficult now to get a traditional publishing deal where they pay you to write, but there's so many other applications and so much training and so many avenues where you can still get your book to market. You can still impact the lives of thousands of people with some assistance, with some coaching and things that I would never, ever want anyone to think that we live in a time where that can't be accomplished.
Well, Teresa, I hope that you have inspired people to tell their story. Thank you so much for telling yours. And I pray that the Lord will bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you. And hey, we'll be right back here tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.